They are Sports Illustrated.
It's amazing.
This incredible body of work.
I really appreciate the integrity.
Everything you do is well done.
You guys do a great job.
We love it. What can we say?
He's Chris Mannix.
He's employed by Sports Illustrated.
The announcer's got it in for me.
There you go.
This is the Crossover NBA Podcast.
You have a problem with it? Build a team that can beat them.
Hosted by the one and only.
Oh, thank God.
Thank God.
Chris Mannix.
Hi, welcome back to another episode of the Crossover NBA Podcast. A lot to get to this week, and we got a lot to get to on this podcast. Trade season is officially upon us, and with the NBA maybe more wide open than it's been in decades, I think it's going to be a lot of activity. So I check in with Billy King, the former general manager of the Sixers and the Brooklyn Nets, and we talk about some of the teams that could be buyers, a team like New Orleans, who might be a seller, just how many teams really do have a chance, and you know what kind of difference makers are out there, from J.J. Redick to Andre Iguodala. We cover all the bases with Billy King. A little bit later on, Chris Forsberg does a great job covering the Celtics over at NBC Sports Boston. He joins me in studio, and we talk about the Celtics season so far. They've been good, but are they great? Is there a deal out there for Boston to make? Is Marcus Smart even available, and would you trade him for a viable big man? A lot to get into with Chris Forsberg as well. Quick housekeeping note, if you like this podcast, very easy way you can support it. Head over to Apple Podcasts, post a comment, leave a rating. It's simple, it's easy, it's free. It's the best way to make sure that we keep doing this podcast week after week. That's it. All right, let's go. All right, Billy King is here, former general manager of the Sixers and the Nets, a wheeler and dealer in his time in the league. Is that an accurate way to describe you, Billy? Wheeler and dealer?
That would be it, yeah. I've made a few trades over time.
Couple of trades, couple of deals here and there. But we are kind of, we're at the start of trade season. You know, the contracts that were signed in the offseason, now eligible to be traded. Before we get into some specific stuff, like, is this like, when people say like the December 15th sort of deadline passed and you can make deals, does that actually ramp up the activity around the league?
I don't think so. I think GMs start talking in December anyway, just because you want to try to get prepared for the trade deadline. You like to try to get deals done before the deadline if you can in January. But if someone signed a contract in July and now they're looking to dump it, you got to be a little cautious to take that contract. So very rarely is there a lot of those guys that you see those guys being moved. They maybe put in deals, guys with smaller deals to, you know, later on, but I don't, it's always a big date, December 15th, but I never felt like it was, there were more phone calls come then.
Yeah, I mean, you don't see a ton of deals between like now and January 15th or whatever. It all sort of kinds to come to a crest before the trade deadline. I'm kind of expecting the same this year. Might see a deal or two happen in the next few weeks, but I do think, Billy, it's going to be a pretty aggressive deadline. You never know if it's going to be busy or not, but I think there'll be a lot of aggressive teams out there. And look, we know what the situation is. There's a lot of parity in today's NBA, and there's probably six or seven teams that are getting up right now thinking, hey, we've got a chance here to win a championship. There's a window open right now for us. When you look across at some of the top-tier teams, which contender out there do you think needs to be the most aggressive over the next couple of months?
Well, it's hard. Like, I look at Philadelphia, and I like their team. I just don't know if it's where I thought they'd be. But they have a lot of contracts that they – it's hard to make trades like they did last year. Last year I thought they had a lot of movable contracts. But, you know, Milwaukee will add maybe one or two pieces. But if you're looking at teams, I think like Houston has to do something to make them, you know, to get themselves better. Defensively, they're not that good this year. They still score in transition, shoot a lot of threes, but they're not in that top echelon where I think they would like to be. Dallas, I think they're just happy where they are. The Clippers, you know, getting Paul George back, they're playing well. If they can do a deal to put themselves in position to compete with the Lakers, but I think out of all the teams we've been talking about, I think Houston is a team that really probably needs to make a trade. And probably in the East, I would say Miami, because they're playing probably better than most people predicted. And if they can get one more piece to go along with them, then they may put themselves there to compete with the Bucks and the Sixers.
All right, you named a few teams there, and I want to drill down on a couple. And you started with Philadelphia, and I'm with you on the Sixers needing to make a deal. I mean, I don't think they have enough shooting to win a championship. I mean, that was pretty apparent at the start of the season, and it's played out that way. I think they also pretty evidentially missed Jimmy Butler. I mean, The Ringer wrote a story recently about the Sixers, and just reading about their efficiency in the fourth quarter, their efficiency numbers are way down, and that's directly attributable to not having a Jimmy Butler type player there. I mean, they don't have, you know, Ben Simmons is a great player and is only getting better, but he still is not that guy that can take over games in the fourth quarter. And I just don't think they can win without that guy. I think teams are too smart and too good defensively that if you're going to rely on Ben Simmons to be that guy in the fourth quarter, you're going to get schemed out of it. They're going to force Ben into uncomfortable situations, and I don't know. I think that's problematic for the Sixers. I mean, can they find that before the trade deadline, or do they just kind of have to hope that it happens organically?
Yeah, I don't know if they can find it at the trade deadline because, you know, like Jimmy Butler is a special player. He can create his own shot and create for others. He's like that Joe Johnson, just give them the ball. And that's exactly what you said. The Sixers don't have a guy you just give the ball to at the end of the game, and they can create for others and create that mismatch. You know, a lot of their guys need other guys to set them up. But if you go inside to Joel Embiid, then it's easy to double him without the shooting, as you spoke about before. It makes it difficult for them. And Ben, I love Ben, but at the end of the game, if he run pick and roll, he put in his hands, guys are going to play off him. So they were the same way last year when they made that trade to get Jimmy, and Jimmy brought that to them. And now they're back to that same team without that type of player. And I don't know if you're going to find a guy trade-wise that can make that happen, because a lot of their pieces on the bench, you know, they're making small dollars, you know, $4 million, $3 million, and generally you don't find a guy out there that's going to be able to do that, making that kind of money.
Yeah, I think in this trade market, I think you can find shooting, but I don't think you can find that alpha. And that, to me, is going to be a glaring weakness for Philadelphia going into the playoffs. They're going to be great defensively, and they might be able to hold some teams like under 90 points in a playoff game. That wouldn't surprise me at all, but at some point you got to get fourth quarter scoring, and they don't have it. So at the top of the conference, you got Milwaukee, and they're playing great. Giannis is, again, an MVP candidate, one of the best records in basketball, but, you know, they're still really looking for that replacement for Malcolm Brogdon, and we all know the situation in Milwaukee. Like, I don't know if it's championship or bust with that group, but it's definitely finals or bust when it comes to showing Giannis that you have a reason to sign that Supermax deal. I mean, if you're the Bucks and you're John Horst, I mean, how much urgency do you have going into that February trade deadline? Do you feel like you've got the pieces to win a weaker Eastern Conference right now, or do you have to go out there and go out and get one more piece?
Well, I think they have everything to win the Eastern Conference, but if you're trying to, at this point, looking where they are, you may try to find that piece so when you do play the Lakers or the Clippers or in the finals, when I put those two teams, I think those are the two teams that would be fighting for the Western Conference. You want to make sure you have another piece, and it's more just toughness because you're going to be going against LeBron or Kawhi, and you need those swing guys. You have Chris Middleton, you have Giannis, but you don't want to wear those guys out having to guard those guys during the playoffs every game in the series. So to me, I look at them, and this is where maybe the Sixers may be able to find it. They may not find it in the trade. They may have to wait for a buyout for a guy. If Iguodala is ever bought out of Memphis, you know, can Milwaukee or can Philly entice him? You know, that's a guy that teams will be fighting for and hoping that he gets bought out, because I don't know if a lot of teams have the pieces to do it, you know, to make that kind of trade. But to me, all these teams, that's the piece I'd be trying to get, because he's a guy who's going to be fresh and he can lock down guys, and he's a great facilitator with the ball.
Yeah, I'm with you on Iguodala to Milwaukee. I think that's a great fit out there. And, you know, he's not Malcolm Brogdon, but, you know, he's made shots in the postseason, defends multiple positions. That's the kind of guy you want on that team. But look, it's still early, and I don't think we have a clear idea yet of who are the how many teams are buyers, how many teams are sellers. I mean, Toronto's out there as a team that I'm not sure what they're going to be over the next couple of months. You know, you certainly have teams at the bottom of the West, Oklahoma City right now. I don't know what they're going to be in a couple of months. But do you look at the guys that might be available? Is there a difference maker on the market right now? Is there somebody out there you're looking at and being like, if that guy is moved, he could make a difference on a championship team?
Now, beyond Iguodala, no, I don't think there's guys like Chris Paul. You know, if you're taking him, you're taking a big contract, and it goes further out. And he's a difference maker because I think, you know, with his experience and just plugging him into a lot of teams, he would make a difference. But then you know, you're setting yourself, and what do you have to give up to get to that number trade-wise? But I don't see a lot. Like last year this time, it was Jimmy Butler. He was available. And, you know, so you knew, okay, that there hasn't been that guy this year you're saying, you know, if we get him, it'll make a difference. You know, New Orleans has been talking about J.J. Redick, who I like is a good piece, but he's not the difference maker. Drew Holiday could be a guy like that because I like Drew's ability to play both positions. He can defend. Not the greatest shooter, but hits big shots, and he can get to the hole and unbelievably tough. I don't think there's going to be like that Jimmy Butler-type difference maker, but Iguodala, Drew Holiday, to me, are those guys that if you can get the hands on, they are like the Brogdons that you talked about, who will guard you, give you the toughness, hit big shots. To me, those are the two guys. If you add them to the teams we're talking about, they won't be that superstar difference maker, but they'll be a difference maker in the sense of they will be a piece that you can plug in and with experience.
Yeah, Holiday to me is really interesting, and New Orleans in general is really interesting. I mean, specifically with Holiday, if I'm Minnesota, I've got to find a way to get him or somebody out there. I mean, the Timberwolves are, you know, out on the outside of the playoffs looking in. They're a horrible home team. I don't know how that's possible. I've never seen a team this bad at home that is actually pretty good on the road. But they have obviously have no confidence in Jeff Teague as a starting point guard. The Wiggins stuff has been hit or miss. I know they wanted D'Angelo Russell in the offseason, but they're a team, Billy, that if they're going to hope to be a playoff team in the West, and I know they want to be a playoff team in the West, you got to make a deal there. I mean, I don't know if it's Holiday. I don't know if it's Chris Paul. I don't think they can get their hands on D'Angelo Russell this year, but they've got to get their hands on somebody. That team needs a point guard. If you put a real point guard on Minnesota, they'd be a bottom half of the West playoff team and probably not a team I'd look forward to playing in the first round. Without them, I just don't see – I don't know that they make the playoffs out there.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Point guards make the whole difference, especially in the playoffs because they control the tempo and they get the guys the ball in the right hands. If you've got a very good point guard or somebody like a LeBron who handles the ball a lot, they can control a series. And as good as Townsend, as good as Wiggins has been playing, Teague hasn't been that guy for them. And that's what's holding them back.
Yeah, I don't think they have any confidence at all that he's going to be – he's the right guy to be a starter on that team. But I know that they got hurt in the offseason not being able to land Russell, but they got to find somebody. I mean, I'm sure they'd take Chris Paul in that contract, but I'm not sure how they make a deal work with Oklahoma City. I'm not sure if any team can make a deal work with Oklahoma City. But keeping it with New Orleans for a second, I mean, that's a team that came into the year with legitimate playoff hopes. I don't want to call them expectations, but hopes. I mean, they added Zion to the mix. They got all those Laker pieces back. I mean, they weren't going to be the same type of threat they would be with Anthony Davis, but I think a lot of people expected them to be in that playoff mix. Zion being out, they've completely bottomed out at this point. And I know a lot of GMs are kind of looking at the Pelicans and wondering, you know, what pieces might be in play. I think Holiday is certainly in play. And if you look down, you know, that list, there are a couple of guys. I mean, you look at J.J. Redick and you wonder if he's out there. I mean, for teams that are looking for shooting, J.J. Redick has that. He has playoff experience. I mean, what kind of player do you think that New Orleans is going to be during the trade market?
Well, I think they have to listen. I mean, you have Derek Favors with an expiring at 17-6. But they're going to be very careful what they bring in. They're not just going to – if they can get picks, I think they'll take in some salary. But I don't see them, you know, just – you know, taking guys in. I think they want to stick with their plan, add some youth to the team and continue to build because, you know, they got Zion coming back. I think with J.J., you know, I don't know if they'll just trade him anywhere because I think he made a commitment to them for 2 years. So I think it'll be one of those conversations that they'll have to have with J.J. Like, look, we're in a rebuild mode. You're not there. It's going to take a little longer. Why don't we try to put you someplace that's good for you? It helps us. Because I know J.J., when he was here in Philly, he commuted back and forth to Brooklyn where his family lives. So I think they will look to shop him. but I think there'll be some consultation with him as well. I think they'll look at Drew Holiday, which they have to at this point in time. I thought they would be better, even with Zion not playing. I thought the roster itself lends itself to be a better roster. We got some good young players, and I thought they played well to start the year. But right now, they just haven't. You know, they're on a bad losing streak, and it's. I don't understand it. Why they are? Because I think they do have talent.
Yeah, Holiday's another guy that's tough to trade too. He's got 2 years left on that deal, and making about $26-27 million in those last 2 years. The final year, I think, is a player option for him. But yeah, I want to ask about Redick though. I mean, I'm sure there's probably a dozen teams out there that love to get their hands on Redick, and he does have that second year of the contract, which increases his value to these teams. But I mean, is he still at 35 a significant difference maker? Is his shooting that valuable that, you know, you put him on a Milwaukee or even back on Philadelphia, and he could be a big factor?
Oh yeah, I think so. I mean, yeah. He was, at the end of the game in Philadelphia last year, I mean, end of the games, I mean, he was their go-to guy. They do dribble hands off of him, and he draws so much attention. It's like Korver, Kyle Korver, his age. They draw so much attention because their shots are so deadly, and they're willing to take them. So, to me, I think you put J.J., especially if he goes to a good team, if you look at the Lakers, or I don't see how Philadelphia can get it done, the Lakers, or if you're looking at the Clippers or Milwaukee, their minutes are going to go down. Milwaukee, I don't know as much because they have Korver. I don't know if you can carry two of them. But if it's the Lakers or the Clippers, they're not going to be asked to do that much but just shoot, because all the attention is going to go to the other guys. So it'll be a lot easier on him. If he's going to a team where he's got to play 30, 32 minutes a night, 34 minutes, that's not going to be a good return on your investment.
No, I mean, look, if I'm Milwaukee and there's a path to J.J. Redick that doesn't cripple me, I go out and I get him because he's that piece. I mean, he's not Brogdon, doesn't defend like Brogdon, but if you're looking to create even more space for Giannis in that Mike Budenholzer five out type of set, that's your guy. Like, that is a huge weapon, especially, look, they could try some different lineups in the playoffs. We know that Eric Bledsoe is suspect in the playoffs until he proves otherwise. Having Redick there, I think that's something that if you're John Horst, you got to be proactive about, right? I mean, he's that guy. He's that piece. I think I'd be the most interested in J.J. Redick if I was Milwaukee.
And so you can plug him in there, but I just worry when you get in the playoffs, can you play Korver? Can you play J.J. Redick? Is there enough minutes for all of them? And I just don't know if there is, especially when you start looking at defensive matchups in a playoff series. And that's why I think, if your team you look at, to me, is the Lakers, when you just start with, the problem with them is they don't have a first. It's so far out. But if you give up Pope, Kentavious Pope, and something else, you're already at J.J.'s number. And you plug him in, it gives him even more shooting there.
Yeah, and if you're the Lakers, you got to be worried about the Clippers. They still have a first-round pick they can deal in a trade like that. And if you're the Clippers, like, what are you waiting on? Like, who cares about that first round pick? I mean, you're now tied into Paul George and Kawhi for the next few years. Like, this is your window. If you have to deal that first and be without a first like the Lakers till, 2050, whatever the hell they're done with their first round picks. I mean, that's something you've got to do. Let me ask you about Boston, because with the Celtics, I mean, they're as good as I thought they would be offensively. Kemba has fit in even better than Kyrie. Tatum and Brown are back to playing at a higher level. Smart's good. I mean, they're very good offensively on the perimeter. What I still am skeptical on is how can they hold up defensively without a real big in the middle. I think Daniel Tice has been one of the most surprising players this year because he's been so good defensively, but he's like 6'9". He's more of a undersized five than a prototypical one. And you saw, when Philadelphia came to town, Joel Embiid had a field day offensively, and I think that's going to happen again if they play the Sixers in the playoffs, and I think that it can happen with Milwaukee. I mean, I don't think Boston wants to trade any members of their core, which now includes Marcus Smart, but what can they put together, Billy? Because they still have their war chest of draft picks, even though it's certainly been cut into in recent years, but they still have assets that they can deal. What can they do out there, and how aggressive do they need to be to put themselves in that contender mix?
Well, to me, I don't know if I would go make that trade and give up valuable pieces, because I think they're better with all the sum of all those guys rather than parts. And so to me, I wouldn't go and just desperately have to make a trade. I would be eyeing the free agent market, guys getting bought out of their deals. You know, if Derek Favors doesn't get traded, is he a buyout candidate? Because now you put him in there, that gives you some physicality against a Joel Embiid. To me, what we're talking about for them is the playoffs. I think they'll get through the regular season and get a great seed, home court. So if they can find that guy in the buyout market, a big, to help them in the playoffs, to me, I think there'll be enough bigs during that time period to just get them there rather than give up pieces to make a trade.
You think there are bigs like that? I mean, I'm looking up and down. I'm not sure who that guy is. And I've thought about this a little bit, but, you know, you're not going to get Robin Lopez on the buyout market. He's signed with Milwaukee, and they're not going to roll the dice on you know, Boston picking him up and him helping them. I'm not sure I see it. I mean, I don't know how Boston makes a deal with what they have. I think, like, in an ideal world, they'd be a big available for, say, Tice and a draft pick. Somebody that could, a needle mover for Tice and a draft pick. If they could get that done, I think they'd do it in a heartbeat. But they might be out of luck. I mean, I just don't, unless I'm missing a name that you're thinking of, that's a big man that could be on the buyout market, that actually would make a difference with this team. Because I just don't see it right now.
Yeah, but I don't think you got to get. You're not looking for a guy that's going to start. You're looking for a guy that's going to give you some depth at that position. So in a playoff series, it gives you six more fouls to give you some physical play, because you don't want to bring. There's not going to be any bad out there. You're going to bring in. So okay, this guy is going to start and take 30 minutes. You're talking about a guy that can come in and slow maybe Joel Embiid down in the second quarter, in the third quarter, beginning of the fourth, and take some fouls. Because right now, that's what they don't have. They didn't have a guy the other night when they were playing the Sixers to put him in. Hey, you go in and guard him for a bit, give Enes a break, and then we can come back with Enes for the offense, you know, down the stretch. That's what they don't have.
Yeah. I mean, that guy would have been Aaron Baines. He was kind of the perfect fit for that, but they had to obviously deal him to get the Kemba Walker contract under wraps, and that's just kind of how it goes. But, I don't look at them as being a high-level team without that big man. One other team I want to ask you about, and that's Houston. And I think they're the most interesting team over the next month because, like, I mean, the future of the franchise is kind of hinging on this season. You got D'Antoni in the last year of his deal. They rolled the dice on Russell Westbrook. They're okay, but certainly not, I don't think right now, I'm not looking at them as saying, you know, the Rockets at like 18-9 are legit threat in the Western Conference. What, you've dealt with Daryl Morey before. I mean, what are you expecting from him over the next month?
I mean, Daryl is trying. I think he's trying to get an Iguodala, trying to figure out how to get involved there to add him, and whether it's through a buyout market. You know, they always are looking to hit the home run in Houston. But the hard thing is, and I know I keep going back to that, is to get an impact player who makes a lot of money. It's really tough for them to put a deal together to get there. That's the hard part. It's just when these numbers are where they are now, you have so many guys at the 30 million, 20 million, it's hard to get to that number without giving up two or three key players on your roster. I mean, if you look at it, you know, Nene's at 10 million and he's got another year after this. Does someone take Nene and something else? Probably not, because I don't see where he fits with a lot of teams. And that's the problem that they're going to have is when you're paying a guy, two guys, you know, $76 million, you know, take up all your, you know, there's not much else you can do. And you throw Capella in there at 16, they're at a number that it's tough to beat. And I think that's their team where they are.
Yeah. Yeah. We've mentioned Iguodala a few times. I mean, what do you think of how the Grizzlies are handling that whole situation down there? I mean, basically telling Andre, stay home, keep working out. We'll let you know when something comes. Do you think ultimately they're going to be able to get a deal done? I mean, the guy makes $17 million, so it's not the easiest deal to make. But do you think they're going to be able to extract an asset back for Iguodala ultimately?
I mean, I think if they hold out, I mean, they'll get to a point where it may just take a second. I mean, a second-round pick. I mean, I remember I had Glenn Robinson when Jim O'Brien was the coach, and, you know, they didn't see eye to eye, and I pretty much said stay home, and I ended up, I think, making a deal with San Antonio, and he ended up there, and I don't think I got much out of it. It may have just been a buyout so he could go there because you hold that hope, and everybody knows that the situation is not going to get any better. And that's the difficult thing. The longer they hold out, people aren't jumping up and saying, okay, I got to give you this for that, for Iguodala. He's already an expiring deal. And I did it before where I told guys stay home until we try to trade him. I do think that's something the league and the union have to come to agreement on and make a rule, because I don't think it's a good look to be paying a guy $17 million not to play basketball, or what Houston did with Carmelo. It's just not good to be saying, okay, we're willing to just pay a guy $17 million not to play basketball, not to work. So to me, they should say you can do it for a two-week period, and other than that, you know, the guy's got to be there and play. Now, the guy can say he's hurt, but he's got to be in town. He can't just say, I'm hurt and I'm going to stay in L.A.
Is it fair to wonder what Iguodala has at this point? I mean, he's 35 years old, be 36 in January. Like, he played 20 minutes a game last year for the Warriors. I mean, is he, how big a difference maker is he, do you think, at this point?
Well, since I know him, it wouldn't be that concerning to me, because he's a guy that's always taking care of himself. And for me, I think it's been great for him, because I think his knees have been able to be rested a little more. So I think physically it's probably helped him, his body.
Yeah, I'm curious to see when he finally gets back to playing, exactly how long it takes him to shake all that rust. But, I mean, look, if you're a team, you got to look at him as a defensive type of guy anyway. So we'll see. Billy?
If you get him in by, you know, we obviously have to have him before the playoff date, I think it's March 1st, you'll have plenty of time to get him in game shape, because, you know, and play. And if he wins you one game a series, it's worth it.
Yeah, no question about that. Billy, always appreciate it, man. Always great to talk to you. And thanks for joining me here on the podcast.
I'm glad. Always happy to be here. Hey, by the way, how's Boston College doing?
Hey, we got a new football coach. How about that? That's great. I mean,
hello?
I'll take it. Yeah, so we got a new football coach. I'm ready
to
go.
Oh, you did? You got a new football coach?
New football coach, straight out of Ohio State.
But I was talking basketball.
Oh, I don't know about that. No, we're still bad. We're still very bad at that. But it's okay. We'll reconvene when they play Duke again this year.
Yeah, we lost to Stephen F. Austin. I shouldn't be talking.
Yeah, exactly. Billy, always appreciate it, man.
Yes, take care.
Now on to my conversation with Chris Forsberg. All right, Chris Forsberg is here, NBC Sports Boston Celtics insider, joining me here for a robust Celtics conversation on the podcast. What's up, man?
Not much. What's going down? Are you injured like the rest of the Celtics, or
any, no? I'm at 80% strength.
It's that's still better. Better than most.
Christmas,
of
maybe you try to recover. You know, all that good stuff. Celtics definitely banged up, and that's one thing I want to get to. But coming into the season, I thought they'd be a good regular season team. I thought. Yeah, not to blame everything on Kyrie, but, you know, you bring Kemba in, everybody likes Kemba. The chemistry is immediately going to be better. And I thought they'd win the games they're supposed to win and probably lose some of the games they're supposed to lose. And they'd wind up in like the top four in the Eastern Conference. That's kind of where they are right now. So in general, has anything surprised you to start the season?
I don't know necessarily surprised. I will say, you know, and maybe we overblow it, but it does feel like that dark cloud sort of lifted over the summer, and maybe we make too much about it. Like, certainly it wasn't just Kyrie, but just like the disaster that was last season. It feels like guys came into the season a little more excited about their opportunities, whether that was the young guys or Kemba just being in a place where he felt like he could win for a change. It felt like everyone came in really invigorated. I think, you know, people made fun of it over the summer about, like, oh, how much will it help going to China? I think it legitimately did, you know, getting to know each other. I just think they hit the ground running more because of it. And so I agree. Like, they're built for the regular season. You know, their perimeter talent has been really good. I think a lot of the things that we thought would have to go right for them to be successful has gone right, whether that's the, you know, Jaylen Brown making strides that people maybe didn't know if he could make, Jason Tatum taking better shots, Gordon Hayward injuries withstanding, you know, being closer to the player when he is out there, and then just Kemba fitting in seamlessly. And so I think long term there's some question marks, but, you know, they played to their strengths, they played to their abilities, they've gotten contributions from guys like Cantor and Tice, and so I'm not surprised by their success. But, you know, it's funny because Kemba keeps thinking, like, oh, you know, no one gave us the credit, the chance to be this kind. I'm like, I don't know. I think we thought you'd be in that second tier. But maybe they're a little bit closer to the Milwaukee and Philadelphia than we thought.
Yeah, I think they're still in the second tier, but they are you know, a player away as they are on.
But how could they get that player? Like, that's the one thing.
That we'll get into, too. I want to get to that. But
I'm jumping all the gun.
I'm a little surprised at how seamless Kemba's fit in. Not because, look, he obviously wanted to play for a winner. That was a priority for him. But he was such a high usage rate player in Charlotte. And I kind of wondered coming in that, not that he'd have a case of, like, Kyrie-itis where he'd just, you know, wind up shooting more than he should be shooting. But, you know, with this team, you got to share the ball. Like, you've got to get guys like Tatum and Brown and Smart and other guys involved regularly. And it seems like he's embraced that to the tune of, like, he might start the All-Star game. Like, looking at the Eastern Conference guard field, like, Kyrie's out of the mix. Kyle Lowry's kind of out of the mix. I mean, not a lot of guys out there at the top level that are All-Stars. I mean, he's got a chance this year. That's been a little surprising to me.
The other thing is, like, when you get that big contract and you're coming to a new team, I think there's an inherent pressure, like, I got to go out there and show them, like, that not only that they paid $32 million for the right guy, and, you know, but that first Knicks game early in the year where he defers to Tatum for the game-winning shot, I said, wow, like, he really is all about just winning and being okay with the young guys, and I think that's important. I do think he's approached it the right way. He's said all the right things. He's you know, I thought it was funny. Tice said something last week where, you know, no, he's like almost screaming. He's so happy to be winning these games in the locker room. And I just think we forget, you know, how much it must have wore on him to be part of that experience in Charlotte and not taste winning and not get to the playoffs. So I do think he's savoring it. And that's made it a little easier to maybe be a little bit more deferential. But certainly, you know, shooting 40%, launching 10 threes a game, like everything that you could have hoped for out of Kemba has come true for Boston.
Who do you think is, of the returning players, who's happiest this year? Like, where is the cloud lifted the most on which player?
I mean, I think we always defer to Jaylen Brown just because we feel like he must have been the most clouded based on, you know, his role being really uncertain, getting moved to the bench. But I think everybody in general is happier, you know, because they've been able to share the ball, because there's been shots for everybody.
We both can agree. I don't think Jaylen liked Kyrie at all. Like, yeah, you know, I think the Tatum, the closeness was there because of the Duke stuff, and yeah, I think Smart was fine with him, but really from day one with Kyrie, remember when he started blaming guys and Jaylen fired
back. Yeah, and Jaylen took that personally. I get it. I mean, I don't think it's any coincidence that that game down there in Brooklyn where they're all sitting there dapping up Kyrie at half court, Jaylen was one of the guys who wasn't out there. And
I noticed that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't think, and he said as much too, right? Like, it wasn't on one player. Everyone could have been better. You know, Jaylen kind of said some comments this week where he put Danny and Brad in a bad spot, but, and probably, you know, it's fair to question, should you do that for the guys that just gave you $114 million and all that? But I think the bigger picture is, like, everyone had to look in the mirror this summer. How can we be better? And how can everybody make strides? And I think Jaylen, as much as anybody, went into the summer and said, all right, I'm not content to be just like 3-and-D guy, stuff me in a corner. I'm going to learn how to ball handle better. I'm going to develop my passing better. And he's really allowed himself to sort of go to another level. Whereas, like, you know, Tatum is taking better shots and scoring comes so easy to him, but I still think he has, you know, so much more room to grow, whereas Jaylen is actually putting it out there and using this new look of the team to really assert himself.
Yeah, and I think the handcuffs have come off Jaylen, and he's thriving because of it. I mean, you know, there's a reason the Celtics don't like to give out extensions, but I think I don't say a bargain, $100 million, $100 million, but
someone would have maxed him, right?
Absolutely.
Atlanta.
In this offseason, with no top-level free agents, somebody would have maxed him out. And Brown, look, he's got a chance to be the second All-Star rep. It might be between him and Tatum if the Celtics stay at the top of the Eastern Conference standings. And look, you look at all his numbers across the board. I mean, his three-point shooting now is down just a tick, but you know, everything else is right around where it was.
I mean, like, he literally, when he put the ball on the ground last year, even just last season, it felt like it was going to be a turnover, right? Like, he just didn't have the vision to create for others, or he would get, you know, he always had this propensity to go up and try and dunk on people, and it was like always a miss. It was always loud poster dunk misses. This year, he feels like he goes with a purpose, and I just think he just had to get into a different mindset, and you know, sometimes he said as much, right? Like, we set ceilings for these guys, like how high they can get, and he just hates that notion. He's like, screw you, I can be better, and he's the one guy that really went out there and kicked in that door.
Yeah, I mean, I was looking at the wrong numbers, too. His three-point shooting is up, his field goal percentage is up, his assist numbers, as you said, up a tick. You know, he's been good. He's averaged right around 20 points per game. Like, he's been worth every nickel. Tatum, I still feel like there's like his engine still in stall to a degree. Like you just, you thought that, and look, his scoring's up as well. Like, you know, you figured that would happen with Kyrie gone, but he's just not taken that jump. His field goal percentage is way down from last year. He's down to around 40%. The three-point shooting is down as well. I mean, is that any cause for concern with where Tatum is? Because he's the guy, like, I look at, and I said this to somebody earlier, like, Jaylen Brown, his ceiling is like A-minus. Like, that's his absolute ceiling.
Right. But Tatum
is an
A. Right,
Tatum is an A-plus. Like, he's the guy that if you're going to be a championship team with this group, he's got to be the guy that becomes the star.
Not to overly accentuate the positives, but I like that he's been clutch in late-game situations. Not just that Knicks game making the winner, but, you know, that Philly game giving them a chance at the end. You know, it feels like even when he has bad nights, he's okay with that moment. So that's encouraging. Certainly his struggles around the rim, it's, you know, it's hard to put a finger on why. He's just, you know, maybe settling for floaters a little too much. He's just not finishing.
I think that's it. Like, I'm still, like, last year I'm looking at Jason and I'm like, wait till he gets his man strength. He starts dunking on guys. He's not dunking on guys yet. And maybe he's a year or two away from having that strength, but he's got such great length that he should be just throwing down on guys.
I've never seen a guy make 20 points look so easy. He can just sort of show up and it happens. And, like, I feel like if he shoots a higher percentage, the shot profile is so much better, a lot more threes, a lot more attempts at the rim. You know, once those shots start falling, he should be 26, 28 point per game scorer, just like, again, just showing up and being there. The one other thing that's really positive is, like, the on-off splits. You know, no one on the team has a better on-court net rating, and he's the only dude in the minus for off-court net rating, meaning they play their best basketball when he's out there. Like, while Kemba is really important to their offense, like, it goes from 110 offensive rating down to, like, 99 without Kemba, and that's not a surprise, right? Like, that's what he does. But Tatum is just does a lot of little things that we sort of take for granted. I think his defense is better than we give him credit for. And so I don't get too hung up on the shots. Like, I feel like he's just too good for those not to fall eventually. And yet I want to see that. I want to see stretches where he doesn't just disappear for 3 minutes, where, you know, he just sort of blends in. That can't happen with Tatum. And I just think that's the next step for him. I think he should be looking at Jaylen Brown and going, oh, wow. Like, you know, Jaylen year three was and now is just like, boom, here we go. And I'm waiting for Tatum to be ready to make that next step and really, again, kick down that door.
His real plus minus, last time I checked, was like right around like Kawhi's. Yeah. Like, they were right in that same ballpark. So he is incredibly valuable there. You know,
hold on. Has he been the team MVP? I love this conversation because everyone has like a different team MVP.
I got to give it to Kemba just because, like, he's steadied the ship.
It's fair because the offensive numbers, again, like, if they didn't have Kemba out there, I don't know if they score 100 points a game. Right? They're like 95 points per game if without him.
And he could have come in and, like, fucked the whole thing up. Like, he could have just been like, all right, I'm going to shoot a lot. And, you know, I think Kemba, in a way, without being kind of this vocal leader, has, and he's been at times, I guess, but, like, he's led by example, and him being so low maintenance has been huge for this team. After dealing with everything from last season, like, he comes in and is just like, man, I'm making a lot of money, but I'm just trying to fit in, guys. Like, I want to make you guys better. So do you give it to somebody different?
No, I mean, I think I deferred early on to Tatum before this little funk here where he struggled with his shot. Again, the on-off splits just to me were like, wow, like, this team is just totally different when he's out there and when he's not. So I gave him credit for that. But I kind of do agree. I feel like Kemba has sort of differentiated himself in terms of, if they don't have Kemba, I'd be worried for this team. I feel like they can get by without Tatum for stretches. Like, you still have your great perimeter talent. Kemba, without giving that scoring burst, it might be a little bit hotter. So I think I'm deferential. But that, the fact that it's a question mark, that you can throw Gordon Hayward in there when he's healthy, that you can throw Marcus Smart based on how he played defensively before all these injuries started mounting, I mean, that's a really encouraging sign for this team.
I feel bad for Hayward, man. Like, every time he seems to get some rhythm going, it's like,
and it's always this fluky stuff. Like, we'll find out more about this ankle, but, like, or, well, foot, whatever they want to call it. You know, the other day, Tuesday after practice, we see him, he's got his shoe off, and he's talking to the trainers, and you're like, oh, wait, that's the ankle, you know, the foot. Fluky stuff, banging his hand against LaMarcus Aldridge, shatters a bone. It's too bad, too, because I thought the way he played early in the year, like, I thought there would be some struggle to reintegrate, even come back from the hand, but, man, like, he hit the ground running, and I think we knew it last year. Brad tried so damn hard to get him going because he knew the success of the team hinged so much on him. And you sort of get the same sense this year, right? Like, they need Gordon Hayward to be really good, especially by the playoffs. And so for him to keep having these starts and stops, it's too bad.
Yeah, I mean, he obviously a whole offseason of just playing basketball was huge for him, not having to rehab and, you know, worry about it. And they did baby him at the start of last season. That was a cause for friction inside that locker room, too. Like, they knew that that was going on with Gordon Hayward. So this is kind of familiar territory for the Celtics, right? They're kind of the little engine that could. They're a team with, like, they're overachieving. Brad Stevens is once again coaching the bejesus out of this team. But they're not, I don't think they're not on Milwaukee's level. Like, mm-hmm. And they're not on the Lakers level or the Clippers level. Like, they're still a cut below championship level. They could, before the trade deadline, do something about that. I mean,
what could
I think,
they do?
I mean, are they a big man away from... So I mean, do they have enough size to
win? Don't disagree with the notion that they're one big man away. Like, in a vacuum, if you could go out, if you could bring Aaron Baines back, which they can't, right? Because, like, of the trade, and that's not impossible. If they had an Aaron Baines-like big man, would this team be a championship caliber? Sure. You know, I'm willing to go there. But when I look at the contracts that they have, the moves that they would be willing to make, I don't see the upgrade that is better or, like, so much better than Daniel Tice and Enes Kanter that you're willing to give up a first-round pick. Or
has Marcus Smart become untouchable inside the organization?
I think probably, like, in the Boston stratosphere he is. Like, I think their fans would revolt if they moved him for, you know, a marginal talent. Like, okay, so he's making $15 million, so you can go get, like, a Tristan Thompson with the right aggregation.
What if it was Clint Capella?
What does Clint Capella do for you that maybe you cross your fingers and hope Robert Williams could do if he was healthy?
That's a big finger. That's
I'm not saying
right
it's
there.
Not.
That is.
That's a big if for a guy who's now sidelined indefinitely with a hip bruise and who always seems to have little things. But like if you could tell me, like, okay, listen, they're gonna have to swallow hard, move Marcus Smart, but they're gonna get certifiable center of the future who can defend Embiid, who can defend Giannis, like, okay, I'm on board. But I don't know if that player exists. Like, short of Horford and or rolling back the clock on Horford, I don't know who that is. And so I just ultimately come back to, you know, they have to hope that their perimeter talent is so much better than everybody else, or at least differentiates them, that the big man position can get by and that Brad Stevens can continue to do what he does and, you know, you smoke in mirrors and hide guys and, you know, Daniel Tice is steady enough to give you minutes.
Tice might be – I think Tice has a shot like an all-defensive team this year. Like the way he's played early on, yeah. Like look at the numbers, like on-off with – you talk about with on-off with Kemba. Defensively, yep. On-off with Tice, he's been great.
Yeah. If he could hold up at all against someone like Embiid, but we've seen it, like even against Jokic, they had to pull him off the court. And, yep. You know, okay, so it's a luxury that you have Kanter to throw in there and who – all right, he struggles in the pick and roll, but at least he can go bang with these guys. I just – you know, I think Tice is a little bit underrated, further removed from the meniscus injury the same year that Kyrie and Gordon were out. I think he's springier. He's blocking more shots. He's definitely been he learned from following Aaron Baines these years, right? Like he's been very good. Is Tice with that core enough to win a title? I don't know. But
I would say no. I think you're okay. Going to run into the same problem with Embiid in the playoffs and Giannis, Brook Lopez, Robin Lopez in Milwaukee in the playoffs. I just don't think you can win without real muscle up front.
I think it's fair, and I think we'll know more based on the regular season matchups. I think they match up better with Milwaukee, even with Giannis being a supernova this year, than necessarily Philly because of just all their pure size overall.
Plus, Eric Bledsoe might melt down.
Well, exactly. And I guess that's what you hope, right? That no Brogdon and you take advantage of that. But certainly, I'll buy the notion that seven games against Embiid, like, how? You know, like, how do they get by there? And there's only so many times you can throw Marcus Smart out there and say, go defend a guy a foot taller than you. But I am curious. Like, we have 5 minutes for their top five players together this season. And so, is that a sustainable lineup? I don't know. Like, even Brad Stevens seems to be like, it might just be too small. But I'd like to see it. I'd like to see it against an elite team. And, you know, maybe then we'll be able to judge whether what they have is enough. And so I think if it's not, then you're left at the buyout market and you cross your fingers. Does Tristan Thompson end up there after the Cavs make whatever moves they make? And but even then, is it enough of an upgrade at that point? I mean, it might just be that you need Robert Williams to develop and be that guy.
You are high on Robert Williams.
I am super high on Robert Williams.
Like, explain this to me. Explain this irrational belief in Robert Williams.
One, I think maybe I get too hung up on the age. I always just picture him being that sort of other guy with Jalen and Jason sort of taking this team into the future, right? Because we don't know what's going to happen with Hayward. Hayward's a fascinating thing with whether he opts into his contract next year, whether the Celtics want to pay to bring him back. Again, the market, you would think teams would be willing to pay for him, but you know, also teams are trying to save that money for the 2021 offseason. So I don't know. Maybe it won't be there. But okay, that regardless, like, you know, who knows what happens after this contract with Kemba. This is the core. So if Robert Williams is your guy, like building towards the future, it could work really well because he complements them as a rim runner, the athleticism, his ability to go up there. They haven't had a guy like
theoretically,
that. Theoretically. All this is with the caveat of he needs to stay healthy. He needs to learn defensive discipline. I sit there and say I see the raw potential, and I think it's easier for Brad Stevens to be like, all right, we're going to teach you how to not bite on every pump fake. But – you know, they necessarily have to teach them how to go block shots. So a lot of hurdles to get through, a lot of obstacles. I think the front office would admit they don't know what's necessarily going to happen with him. He's just their best hope. Like, I just don't know what Daniel Tice's ceiling is only so far. Robert Williams at least has something. So if it's not Robert Williams, then it's whoever you get with the Memphis pick or whatever you parlay into your – because, like, clearly center has to be a focus at some point moving forward here. And so I just like to see – I just want him on the court to figure out if he's that guy.
See, I'd take Tristan Thompson as a buyout guy. I just think the competition for him is going to be real. Like, the Clippers are going to be out there with a hole in their front court, and they can say to Tristan, like, you know, we're L.A., we got a chance to win a championship. Maybe want to thwart LeBron. I don't know. But, like, you know, I think that's going to be a tough.
Shouldn't Boston have, like, a great pitch, though? Like, hey, we got minutes. Are you better?
But they have minutes, too. Like, you know, that's the Clippers still have.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
They have some front court issues.
Montrez, you know, like, I feel like.
But you could play them together sometimes. I mean, I think that, and plus LA, like, there's
right,
an appeal.
Right. And that might be the biggest sell of all, right? Like, that you want to come to Boston or you want to go to LA?
Go live in LA. I think what, for me, what it comes down to is. Do you flip Marcus Smart for Capella? Because I'm a big believer in Capella. He fits kind of the, like,
he's everything I want Robert Williams to be.
He is, but he's also 25. He's in the middle of a long-term contract. He's a rim runner, like you said, everything you want Robert Williams to be, and he's got great size. And I think he can defend Embiid, and he can do all the things that you need a pivot to do. The price is going to be high. The question is, you know, can you count on Gordon Hayward and Kemba Walker and Jaylen Brown to be that kind of three-man backcourt rotation with Tatum and sometimes at the four? And can you trust that you can get away with losing your best defensive player in Marcus Smart? And because, Chris, there's a window, man. Like, you talk to teams across the league, like, you know, people are trying to trade, like, you know, future season tickets for Andre Iguodala at this point. Like, everybody's trying to get in the Iguodala sweepstakes because they believe a 35-year-old forward who plays 20 minutes per game and will not have suited up in, like, almost a calendar year can be a difference maker this year. I mean, I think if Capella could come in here, and there's no guarantee he's available either, but I look at the,
right, I start to think
the Rockets, like, are a powder keg to me, though. They're kind of like a
– and I can buy that. Would they want Marcus Smart, though? Like, I mean, where do they play him? Like, do they have enough guard positions to – I mean,
well, you could play Harden as kind of the one and Marcus as a de facto two. I actually think it makes some sense for them to have – to have those guys in sort of like the West.
It would help for them to have some defense.
It would. They don't have any at the moment. But I don't know. Like, that's the one thing. If it ever came up, if Daryl Morey and Danny, who have talked a lot about trades in the past, if that ever came to it, like Smart and a pick for Clint Capella, that's a tough call for me.
I can see it. I just, like, in my mind, I can't wrap my mind around the idea of a Marcus Smartless Celtics right now. Like, I feel like Brad Stevens.
I know. He's the interwoven to the DNA of that team right
and
now.
And yet, like, ultimately, you have to make tough decisions when you're seeking a title, which is why I think Hayward's fascinating. Again, you know, if I'm Danny Ainge and I had to pick one guy that, all right, I have to swallow hard and move, as much as the optics would be terrible about moving Hayward after all he's been through, you know, there is the risk that you're not able to bring him back. And so this team, after watching Kyrie leave for practically nothing, even though the sign and trade and all that, to get Kemba with that space, I just don't see. You can't just keep losing assets without getting stuff back. And so it would be very dangerous for them to watch Horford walk away, to watch, you know, Kyrie walk away, and now potentially to watch Gordon Hayward walk away.
Do you think he'd walk
something
from that $34 million?
You know what?
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money. And I think there has to be good faith both ways. Like, all right, Celtics kind of saw this through with me. They've been patient. They've tried to get me back. So I do think there's a chance he opts in. And yet, you know, like, players got to be a little ruthless too. So if he's looking, he's going to have that 10 years in the league. He's going to be eligible for 35% of the max. Like, if there's a team out there that's willing, as Al Horford showed us, sometimes you have to go take the money. Or maybe there's a better opportunity. And so I just can't rule it out. So, like, in cold-blooded Danny Ainge has to make a move. I think that's more likely than maybe Marcus. But ultimately, I think they're going to be too scared off of, if we keep this together and we just deal with the deficiencies, we have a better chance than necessarily making a Perk-like move, right? Where you make a dangerous trade, and does it hurt you more than it helps you in the long run?
Man, I'm just like, I think, and it's obviously just guesswork at this point, but I think you add Capella to this mix, even if you take Smart out of it, you put yourself in a better position to beat Philadelphia and to beat Milwaukee than you are as currently constituted.
Oh,
because
for sure.
Philly, like, until they prove otherwise, they're not a team that's very good in the fourth quarter. Like, they just, look at their offensive rating in the fourth quarter all season, not been very good. They missed Jimmy Butler mm-hmm. in that regard. And until Eric Bledsoe shows he can play in the postseason, he's still a liability. That's where they will miss Malcolm Brogdon at that position. I think that the East is, there's an opening there. And Miami, I don't know if you can count on yet. I mean, they're still relatively new to this whole thing.
They make a move, though.
They're always trying to make a move. But
yeah.
here, take, you know, Dion Waiters and Kelly Olynyk and, you know.
So what about this? What about if the Celtics, I mean, so here's the other option for the Boston is to just take a, you know, middling contract, a $5 million, whether it's Tice or Cantor.
Tice, I think. I would think they would love to make a Tice plus pick type deal for somebody.
So would you sacrifice Grizzlies pick to go get someone that might not be, or, you know, or both of your late first round picks, because they've got Milwaukee's first. So you've got the, like, the 28th or 26th and the 30th pick probably, you know. Are you willing to give those up to make a marginal upgrade at that position?
Not marginal, but I would give
Cody Zeller.
No. I mean, maybe the back end, but the Memphis pick, and I am not advocating hold on to draft picks. That is a bad idea at this point.
Let the Kings pick be the primary.
We've got to stop freaking doing that. But if you could find a way to make the money work with Tice and the Memphis pick for Capella, I'd do that in a heartbeat. I mean, I'm against, especially since Memphis might not finish the season all that terribly. They might, look at the Warriors, Knicks, like, these teams are
bottom
out. That might convey this year at 7 or 8, and like at that point, then who gives a damn? I my understanding is they would love to do something with Tyson and a pick.
I think they've and it would take some serious aggregation. You throw Wanamaker in there, whatever pieces you don't feel like are integral to moving forward. But it's tough. They just don't have those. Like, they need a $10 million salary that they can just move. You know,
that's what Smart was supposed to be. $13 million. He was signed to be traded at that time. He's just played his way out of it. Like, he's just like, you know what? You can't get rid of me. I am Boston. Like, I am this market.
This is when they need those 50% rule that, you know, Simmons and everyone keeps screaming about, because, you know, they just can't make moves right now. And so, I don't know. It's going to be tricky. But the window, like you said, is there. And I just think, you know, if a move materializes, they do have to give it strong thought.
Windows there more so for any team in the league than it's been in years past. Like, the parity is real in the NBA. Chris, always appreciate it, man. Good stuff. We'll see you on NBC Sports Boston, on Twitter, all your stuff there, NBCSportsBoston.com. Always appreciate it, man.
Thank you, my friend.